Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. We can pretty much call this pro-life superstar day. Trent Horn last hour, this hour, Stephanie Gray Connors, who has a brand new book out called Conceived by Science, Thinking Carefully and Compassionately About Infertility and IVF. You probably know some of her earlier works, and you're probably like, what happened to Stephanie? Well, she got a sweet little baby who everybody here just got a look at just before the show, except for me, because my monitor wasn't on. But congratulations on the new baby and on the new book.
Thank you so much. Life has been very full but rich.
Uh-huh. Yeah. So and what's the little lady's name?
Violet.
Little Violet. Oh, come on. Yeah. All right.
She's my little flower. I call her my little flower.
Oh, that's so nice.
Actually, I'll do a shout out here. Her middle name is Grace, Violet Grace. And we named her middle name after my dear friend, Lila Grace Rose. Lila's known for her pro-life work. Because Lila, we credit for setting up my husband and I, as well as we almost miscarried Violet. And Lila connected us to a NAPRO technology doc, Dr. George Delgado, who you know.
Of course,
right,
yeah.
In San Diego. Yeah. And she connected me the day we got blood work back showing my progesterone levels were dropping. And I got on progesterone right away, and Violet was saved, and I gave birth several months later.
Oh, so that's beautiful. Well, I'll get to see Violet one of these days. Everybody else did, but I had to have my monitor off. Our number is 888-318-7884, and we really do like babies around here at Catholic Answers. We were just talking with you before we went on the air. What if Violet needs you? That it's fine. She can come on the air because we it's Catholic Answers. If we don't like babies, we're no good at being Catholic. But so I think that many people then reason, well, the Catholic Church must accept IVF because look at all these beautiful babies that in vitro fertilization has produced.
Right. Great, great question out of the gate. And I think that's where we need to pause and say, yes, babies are a gift. They are to be celebrated. And the question we want to ask ourselves is, because that is the case, does that give us permission or license to do just anything to achieve or receive this gift of a baby, this gift of life? And everyone who thinks of that question could come up with the answer, actually, no, we can't just do anything. For example, we couldn't kidnap someone's baby in order to achieve the gift of a child, mm-hmm. because we would have stolen someone else's child. So as much as children are to be celebrated and to be received and enjoyed, we can't commit an unethical act such as kidnapping to achieve the beautiful end of a child. So what we need to consider with examining in vitro fertilization is that an ethical or an unethical act or means to achieve a child? And so that's what we can unpack in this hour with our conversation, with people calling in. But in brief, the answer would be that in vitro fertilization manufactures human beings into existence, treating a subject as though it is an object. And in doing so, it diminishes the human person, as well as creates a whole number of ethical quandaries, such as eugenic selection, killing some children to create other children. And so there's a whole host of problems that we can unpack. But the main principle is the end doesn't justify the means. So yes, the end of children is great, but certain means to achieve that end are not ethical.
If you'd like to talk with Stephanie Gray Connors about her brand new book, Conceived by Science, Thinking Carefully and Compassionately About Infertility and IVF, or if you just have general questions about IVF, you are welcome to call 888-318-7884, 888-318-7884. So as you have engaged in your long pro-life work, is this something that I can imagine you probably go give a pro-life talk somewhere, and there are people who don't even know that IVF is problematic, maybe even think of it as a pro-life undertaking. Is this why you wrote the book? Has our messaging been bad on this?
There hasn't been sufficient messaging, for sure. And it's because with abortion, it's more obvious. It's ending a human life. Whereas with in vitro fertilization, it's creating a human life. Although, as I pointed out a moment ago, it also involves ending some lives. But the point is, because overall it is oriented towards creating life, people think, well, isn't that a good thing? And this is where we need to teach critical thinking in our culture. We need to teach people to think deeply about an issue and not just on a surface level. On the surface level, the concept of creating life sounds great. It sounds positive. It sounds wonderful. But then when you dig a little deeper, we begin to see problems. And so what was happening in my talks on abortion is during Q&A, some people would say in questions, well, what about in vitro fertilization and is IVF okay? And then what would happen in the course of my answering that question is some audience members would disclose they were conceived by in vitro fertilization or they pursued in vitro fertilization.
Yeah.
And yeah, so then I discovered this was deeply personal. As with the abortion issue, when emotions are involved, when personal experience is involved, it can cloud sometimes our ability to receive moral reasoning or logic because we want to hear a certain answer. We want to hear a certain line of messaging. We're personally affected and so forth. So I quickly began to realize that if I have this skill to teach people how to think deeply and argue pro-life apologetics on one issue such as abortion, maybe I could take those skills and apply it to this other issue where there seemed to be a lot of confusion and less formation.
Again, our number 888-318-7884. We're talking in vitro fertilization with our guest, Stephanie Gray Connors, the author of a new book called Conceived by Science, which is about infertility and in vitro fertilization. I guess the other side of this is the other emotional side of it is the not the parent who has conceived by or the child or the person who has been conceived by IVF, but the couple who is looking at possible infertility and meaning that they really might not be able to conceive children together. So that IVF must start looking awfully attractive.
Absolutely. And this is where we have to tread carefully when discussing this issue, realizing real people's stories are in this debate. People yeah. who live with the suffering and the very heavy cross of not being able to have a child with one's beloved. And we need to acknowledge that that is a tragedy and that we ought to try to correct the problem in as many ethical ways as possible. So objecting to IVF does not mean objecting to interventions. As I briefly mentioned at the beginning, the fact that I pursued the hormone treatment of progesterone when I was pregnant is one example of an ethical intervention because my body was working incorrectly. It was not producing an adequate level of progesterone to sustain a pregnancy. Some women don't even produce enough progesterone to achieve a pregnancy. So they aren't getting pregnant cycle after cycle. And if they were connected to a good physician as I was and had their blood work checked, they might come to see, oh my goodness, I can't even get pregnant because I'm so low in progesterone. And then the ethical solution is to take a pharmaceutical that basically brings your body up to the level it naturally should be at. There's many other examples of ethical interventions we can discuss as the hour unfolds, but the point is we want to journey with people who are carrying this heavy cross and do our best to lighten it. And if that means solving the problem ethically, fantastic. And if that means coming up with other solutions such as spiritual parenthood, adoption, fostering, those are also other paths that we can help someone look at.
Again, Stephanie Gray Connors, our guest, we're talking about in vitro fertilization. If you'd like some help in that department, if you'd like some clarity, maybe there's someone in your life you'd like to speak to about this and you'd like some clarity for that, 888-318-7884. We have to take our first break, then we'll come right back, and I promise I will go right to the phones. About half the phone's full right now, so lines are still open if you have questions about in vitro fertilization. 888-318-7884.
There's only one, Catholic Answers Live.
The Aquinas Writing Advantage Program is part of Homeschool Connections' set of online courses for your Catholic homeschool. Homeschool Connections' website is homeschoolconnections.com.
A lot of people that I think are holy, and then you 5 years later, you find out, oh.
Yes.
And then there are other people that, let's just say, maybe lack some social suavité, some sophistication, and you think, well, that was rude. And then you get to know them, and 5 years later you realize, you know, beneath that rough exterior, there's a heart of gold.
Called to Communion with Dr. David Anders. Tonight, 11 Eastern, on EWTN Radio.
Welcome back. Catholic Answers Live. Hey, Joe Heschmeyer's very well-received book, The Early Church Was the Catholic Church, is on bulk sales now. And I think the reason it's available in bulk right now is they'd really love you to get it for your Bible study, for your parish, for your family, for Lent and Easter. So it's just $3 a copy when you buy in bulk. That's $20 books at a time. So for a box of books, it's $3 per copy, so $60 for the box. You want to get 10 boxes for the parish, that'll cost you just $600, and you get 200 books to give out at the parish. So consider that, and you can find the bulk sales over at shop.catholic.com. On the line with us, on the program with us this hour, is Stephanie Gray Connors, who's got a brand new book out, a very helpful book on in vitro fertilization called Conceived by Science. You might know her from her, she's very well known for her earlier book, Love Unleashes Life, Abortion and the Art of Communicating Truth. You can find out all about her and schedule her for talks. If she's got time to get away from Violet Grace, she'll come give a talk where you are. Just find all you need about Stephanie Gray Connors at loveunleasheslife.com. I'm going to go to Sophie first. Sophie, thank you very much for the call. Sophie calling from Miami, Florida, watching on YouTube. Go ahead, Sophie, with your question for Stephanie Gray Connors.
Hi, it's nice to meet you. So my question is, if in vitro fertilization was the couple's only option to get pregnant naturally, like that was their only way that they could have a child, would that be immoral? Like, if you could take, I'm not really sure how the process works, but per se, let's say you take out maybe like 3 or 4 eggs and then you use the sperm to create embryos with all those 4 eggs, maybe you could use those 4 eggs to implant in the uterus later on for, you know, each consecutive year when you want to have another child. So, I mean, would that be moral?
I appreciate the question, Sophie, because a lot of people who may have some concerns about IVF might narrow it down as you did and say, okay, what if it's a married couple and they just created a few embryos? Is that okay? And I would say, as much as their desire for children is good, unfortunately for them, the answer still is it's not moral to do. And the reason is human beings, by being subjects and not objects, should be received as gifts. And we aren't to be owned or possessed by another. So the gift of human life comes from God, not another human being. It's why, for example, we would say slavery is wrong, because slavery involves possessing or owning another. And we are to be an equal to our fellow human being, not have a relationship of superiority and inferiority. So the problem then with IVF is that instead of the gift of a human life, a child, coming through an act of sexual intimacy as the fruit of sexual intimacy, instead of that, with IVF, what happens is at the hands of a stranger, someone outside of the marital relationship, another human being is manufactured into existence. And it's as though the person creating that child in the lab owns it and is gifting it, but it's not their gift to give. Human beings are persons, not objects. And so what happens is then you're creating a human being outside of the bounds of sexual intimacy and outside of the union of a husband and wife who have made a covenant to each other in marriage. And instead you have a third party. They've essentially contracted out the creation of their offspring instead of receiving that offspring. And even if they only make a few, as you pointed out, they maybe go back each consecutive year for the other children. Let's say they make 4, they implant 2, they freeze 2, they go back over the next 2 to 4 years for the other 2. What if something happens? What if the woman needs a hysterectomy after the first pregnancy? And suddenly they have 2 children in the freezer that they cannot transplant into the mother's body because she has no uterus for them to go into. So that creates then a whole new ethical dilemma of they have children who are alive, but those children should only be in the body of their mother. They can't go in the body of their mother. What responsibility do we have for these children? Even if she didn't have a hysterectomy and tried for that third pregnancy after she has the first two babies, the other problem that could arise is when that child is thawed for implantation, the child not survived the thawing process. So we're jeopardizing the safety of that child by placing the child in a freezer and in a lab instead of keeping the child in the mother's body where through sex, that's where fertilization will occur.
Sophie, does all that make sense to you?
Yeah, I thought that was a really good explanation. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you for the call. Oh, go ahead. You had a follow-up?
Yeah. Oh, I was just going to say, so what other options could they explore?
Ah, I'm glad you asked that. So a few things. I think it's important for a couple to find the right physician, and looking up for doctors that are involved with what's called NAPRO technology, Creighton Fertility, or Restorative Reproductive Medicine. All of those categories are the same type of thing that involve trying to identify the underlying pathology that is preventing pregnancy and correct the problem at its root rather than pursue IVF. IVF doesn't correct a pathology, it just overlooks it entirely. So if each the woman and man go to a NAPRO technology restorative reproductive medicine physician, they could have a number of examinations done to determine what the cause of infertility is. The woman may have blocked fallopian tubes, and the response to that could be surgery to unblock her tubes so that sperm, eggs, and embryos can all travel through the tube easily. She might have PCOS and could have what a friend of mine had, which is called ovarian wedge resection surgery, where there was surgery done on my friend's ovaries that enabled then eggs to be subsequently, when they were ovulating, to actually be released so that sperm could get to them and be fertilized in her body as a result of sexual intimacy. Maybe the husband has low sperm count and there's certain vitamins and pharmaceuticals he could take that would help with that. So the point is that they need to first be connected to a restorative reproductive medicine physician. I'll certainly give a shout out again for Dr. George Delgado, who personally helped me. But he's connected to a network of other doctors who do similar things. And so to pursue seeing if there's something wrong hormonally or that requires surgery. And for some people, once those are identified and corrected, they get pregnant. And I give examples in my book like that. There are, however, some people who pursue everything that's ethical and still find out that they cannot conceive a child. And in my book, I talk about those people. I've interviewed friends of mine like that who've never conceived, and they talk about their pursuit of spiritual parenthood. A friend of mine travels the world in Christian ministry, and she finds fulfillment in that. I also share stories of friends of mine who pursue fostering and other friends who pursued adoption.
Sophie, thank you again. Appreciate that call and that question. And Darren, for my book, I'm allowed to give it away to anybody I want for any reason, right? So, all right. So, Sophie, I wrote a book called The Teacher of Strange Things. It's about Jesus, and I would like to give it to you for free. Just hang on, because I'm apparently allowed to give away my book for any reason at all. And you have the same name as my middle daughter, so I'm going to give the book to you. The number here is 888-318-7884, 888-318-7884. Our guest is Stephanie Gray Connors. Her new book is called Conceived by Science. It's about in vitro fertilization. If you have questions about in vitro fertilization, you are welcome to call. Up next, we go to Karen in Boise, Idaho, listening on Salt and Light Radio. Karen, thank you for waiting. Please go ahead with your question for Stephanie.
Okay. First of all, Stephanie's been to Boise 2 or 3 times, so we've had the pleasure of meeting her, and thank you for all you do. How is surrogacy? I mean, I'm not for it. I just know someone who wants to do it. Is it related to IVF? Does the mother have to go through all those steps to be a surrogate mother as you do for an IVF?
Great question, Karen. Yes, I have fond memories of my time in Idaho, and it's great to hear from you. And it's a great question. And yes, I actually talk about surrogacy in my book in the context of in vitro fertilization, because the two can be connected. For some people, they need help achieving conception in a lab. That's why they go to IVF, sperm and egg are put together, but ultimately the embryo is put in the biological mother's body. But for some couples, the issue is the woman herself does not have things working properly in her body to be able to have a pregnancy be sustained. And so such a couple might pursue surrogacy. And so the problem with that is severalfold. The first is we're manufacturing a human being, as I already pointed out in my other answers. And there's this commodification of the human person. So the surrogate, for example, is going to be compensated for essentially renting out her body. There are some reproductive clinics that will pay $50,000, $60,000 to a surrogate to rent out her body. But then who is ultimately deciding about that pregnancy? Is it the surrogate or is it the parents? And I share some stories in my book about how biological parents wanted surrogates to have abortions because as the pregnancy progressed that they had wanted, they found out through pregnancy testing, that genetic testing, that there was something genetically wrong with the child and they weren't counting on that. And they no longer wanted a child if the child was gonna have genetic problems. So there are fertility clinics that will compensate a surrogate $10,000 if they go ahead and have an abortion. So we see there are problems with that. Another point to consider with the problems of surrogacy is while we can acknowledge the surrogate might have good intentions, they might think, gosh, I've been able to have a baby. I want to help someone else to have a baby. In fact, I watched a story about a surrogate in a documentary who said she is so grateful to be able to give the gift of a child to people who can't have one. And the question we have to ask ourselves is it the surrogate's gift to give? The reality is, as I mentioned a little earlier, God is the one who gives the gift of life. If I can give the gift of a human being to someone else, then I am, without realizing it perhaps, creating a standard where I am superior and the human being I'm gifting is inferior because I own and possess them and can give them away. But the problem is human beings aren't inferior to me. They're my equals. So I should treat them as equals, not as something that's inferior. An analogy could simply be, if you were in a toy store and you saw a kid really wanted a toy and his parents said, I'm sorry, we can't afford it. Imagine you responded by grabbing the toy the kid wants. And as the kid walks out the door saying, here you go, I'll give it to you. Well, the kid might be happy that he got the toy he wanted so badly, but you aren't the toy store owner. And in this scenario, you didn't buy the toy. So you've essentially given away a gift that isn't yours to give. And so the reality is we don't own or possess other human beings. And therefore we don't have a right to give a human being to someone else, which is essentially what surrogacy involves.
Okay, so you've answered my question, which I was pretty sure was the truth, that it's surrogacy is against Catholic teaching. So a hospital that claims to be Catholic but says they are open to surrogacy treatments, we have a problem, right?
Absolutely. If there's a Catholic hospital that is, I would say there's two things. You could have a hospital involved in the implantation or the insertion of someone's embryo into a stranger's body, essentially the surrogate being a stranger. And if they're involved in doing that, and then the surrogate hoping by going to that hospital to have the insertion done that the embryo implants and grows for 9 months, that's a problem. Now, if a surrogate happens to show up at a Catholic hospital to give birth, that's not a problem. Anyone who is pregnant has a right to medical care when they are delivering a child, so they deliver a child safely, both for the woman and the child. But if what you're suggesting is a hospital not receiving anyone in labor, but a hospital actually impregnating a stranger with someone else's baby, which is what surrogacy essentially
advertising it. A Catholic hospital?
Yeah, then that's a problem.
Well, it's a hospital that claims to be, yeah. So well, one other question. The girl, the girl that is asking is not Catholic, and I was looking for a medical reason. She's not going to buy the Catholic reason, but I was looking for the medical reason that she's going to have to go through some fairly horrendous procedures to get this done. It's not just a matter of going in and having an implant and having a baby. Right?
Yes.
I mean, isn't there some...
Mm-hmm. Great question to provide more info to. So as Cy has mentioned, my book, Conceived by Science, actually, although I'm Catholic, is written to a broad interdenominational Christian audience. So if this woman has even any religious affiliation, there are some arguments in there that would resonate even with a non-Catholic Christian person. There's also a whole section, part two, is primarily not religious-minded at all in its arguments. And it talks about IVF and surrogacy being problematic because some humans are killed. It involves parents denying their responsibility to children and the commodification of humans. And that chapter on the commodification of humans really looks at surrogacy as being part of that commodification mindset. So this is potentially then a resource that you could hand over to this woman that you're speaking with to consider some of the stories of people. One of the things I cite in here is some research, and I hear the music, so I think we'll let it go to break and I can wrap up the point after we get back.
Thanks, Karen. Thanks very much. Thanks to the other callers that are hanging on too. We will get to you as well when we come back. Stephanie Gray Connors, author of Conceived by Science, a wonderful new book for anybody, as Stephanie said, not just for Catholics, on the moral implications of in vitro fertilization. Right back after this.
This is Archbishop Salvatore Cordiglione of San Francisco. Thank you for listening to Catholic Answers Live.
Did you know you can access Catholic Answers Live right from your phone or other mobile device? Download the Catholic Answers Live app today. The Catholic Answers Live app, available now on iOS and Android.
Have you enrolled in the Catholic Answers School of Apologetics? Let me ask you a more important question. Do you believe as a Catholic that you have an obligation to share the Catholic faith? In fact, the Church has answered this question, and the answer is that all confirmed Catholics are obliged to share the faith. It's actually in canon law. Catholic Answers is here to help you fulfill that obligation. Our School of Apologetics courses will equip you to help all the people you come in contact with understand what the Church teaches and why. A great place to start is with all the Catholics in your life. Learn the art of apologetics from the best of the best and start sharing the gospel today. Visit schoolofapologetics.com. That's schoolofapologetics.com.
Most of us Catholic parents agree our number one goal in life is to pass on the faith to our children. But here's the bad news. Today's world has a million ways to steal your kids' soul. Don't be afraid, says Father Sebastian Walsh. God loves your children even more than you do, and he desires their salvation more than anything. In his groundbreaking new book, Always a Catholic, Father Walsh shows you how to cooperate with God to bring about the fulfillment of his will for your kids. Always a Catholic reminds us that keeping our kids in the faith is about the way we live our Catholicism in our own lives and as a family from day to day. Order your copy of Always a Catholic by visiting shop.catholic.com today or ask for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Matt Swaim here. Tomorrow on the Sunrise Morning Show, we'll discuss Fat Tuesday traditions and look at dust and ashes in the Bible with Steve Ray as we prepare to enter into Lent. Now back to Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back. Catholic Answers Live. Probably the best music in Catholic radio, I think. Probably the best music in Catholic radio. I don't really think we have a serious competitor. I've listened to all the other Catholic radio shows. I think we have the best music. Karen in Boise was asking our guest, Stephanie Gray Connors, who has a brand new book called Conceived by Science about in vitro fertilization, about surrogacy. And you had left some points that you wanted to cover before we moved on. So you want to wrap up where you were?
Yeah, sure. She was wondering, you know, is there risk to the surrogate? And yes, there's definitely things to be concerned about. In chapter 8 of my book on the commodification of humans, I go through that. So I would just point people and her in that direction. But one of the concerns is that if you're a surrogate, you and you're someone's been an egg donor, so you're not providing the eggs. That means the embryo that's in your body is truly a foreign embryo. The embryo was not created with your egg. Obviously, the female doesn't have sperm. And it's almost like, you know how when you have a organ donation, you have to take anti-rejection drugs. Your body is more likely to reject the organ because it's a foreign body. So there is concern that the truly foreign embryo in the body of a surrogate could create some problems, such as an increased risk of preeclampsia and other problems. You also have to kind of kickstart the body into a situation where it would be ready for implantation. And there's a number of things to be concerned about. So the book has more info, but yes, she's right to be concerned that there are things a surrogate needs to be aware of.
Thank you, Karen. We go now to Anonymous, listening to Catholic Answers app. Anonymous, thanks for downloading the app onto your phone. Go ahead with your question for Stephanie Gray Connors.
Yeah. My question is, I guess twofold. So my sister has had in vitro fertilization. She has several eggs frozen. And then my niece and nephew came from IVF. And I love my niece and nephew, obviously, because, you know. but I don't know, as a Catholic, and they're not Catholic, I don't know how to, like, talk about that with her. She kind of had a flippant statement at one point, like, oh, well, I don't know if I'll have that many babies, the number of eggs that she has saved. So I had started to look into embryo adoption and, like, what the Catholic Church teaches about that and what kinds of things would go into that. And it looks like, I don't know, the Catholic Church is kind of up in the air about whether or not you'd be able to adopt embryos. And then even if they were okay with it, I don't know that my sister would be okay with somebody else raising her genetic child. So
you want to know,
kind of hear what your thoughts were on embryo adoption and then also how to talk to people about
IVF.
How do people in your family about IVF and stuff?
Okay, Stephanie?
Yeah, really important questions. So one thing to clarify is a lot of people will use reference, as you have, to eggs being frozen. You could confirm with your sister, but in my understanding and research, the vast majority of things frozen actually aren't eggs, but embryos. And of course, there's an important distinction there because the embryo is a part of a human. The egg is a part of a human, but the embryo is a whole human. Fertilization has already happened. And so instead of parts being frozen in the case of an embryo, it's a whole individual, a child that is frozen. And so when people speak about their frozen eggs, we want to say, actually, is it eggs or is it embryos? And then if it's embryos, we want to be able to make that clarification so they realize they have children in freezers. What would we do if we froze three toddlers? Would we be concerned about that? Would we rightfully, you know, be concerned about the protection and safety of those children and advise someone to not even do that to begin with? So that's the first thing. The second is, in terms of how to speak to someone on this, it's certainly a sensitive subject, as I said at the beginning of the program, so we need to tread the waters carefully. A few things is to ask a lot of questions, as I say, with all the controversial topics I talk about. You know, if someone says they have embryos frozen, how many do you have frozen? Have you thought about going back and having them? And if they say, as you've indicated, your sister indicates, well, we might go back for two, but there's four, so we're going to leave two. How do you feel about that? Have you thought about what that means for those two children? And you're asking these open-ended questions to see what they say. And even just having them doing more talking and explaining is going to get them thinking more deeply about something they perhaps haven't thought beyond the surface level of, beyond the emotion of the desire for a child. And so ask a lot of open-ended questions that would also then alert them to things they should be concerned about. Have you checked in with the fertility clinic as to what their measures are to make sure they don't wrongfully implant your children into someone else's body? Because there have been news stories about fertility clinics getting embryos mixed up and getting the wrong embryo implanted into a woman's body. And then, you know, a white couple has an Asian child and they're like, what's going on? And they do a genetic test and realize, whoa, this isn't our baby. How did this happen? So So that's something that she might be concerned about. You could raise the issue with her. Certainly, if we're speaking to people who have yet to pursue IVF, you know, making the points, as my book does, about the number of embryos typically created, that embryos are endangered in the process of being created outside the woman's body, that some embryos are killed, some embryos are scientifically experimented on, the commodification aspect of it. So making all of those points can help deter people. And then if someone has already pursued it, as your sister has, then I think really praying for a receptive heart to the open-ended questions you ask, so that she comes to the realization, which is likely to only happen over time, not in an instant, that they have made a grave mistake, and that that's something that needs to be repented of. And we trust in God's mercy, but we need God, and we need to repent and confess to God, you know, come to know God if they don't even have a relationship with God. And that's important not only for our own spiritual well-being, but so that we stop being a bad example, because someone who's pursued IVF is likely open about that, which then could encourage other people to pursue IVF. So we want to have these conversations with people who don't share our view, so that they have a conviction, a change of heart, so that they start to tell people, you know, this is what we did, and we didn't realize the long-term implications, the fallout that could happen, the commodification of the human person, and so forth. In terms of embryo adoption, I know we have other phone calls, so I'm briefly going to say that I do take an appendix in my book to tackle that. It's only tackling it briefly because it could be a whole other book in and of itself. And yes, ethicists are debating whether it's ethical or not. And some very renowned, wonderful Catholic ethicists have said, no, it's not ethical to adopt frozen embryos. It makes you like a surrogate. Other people have said, you know what, the embryo already exists, so we're just rescuing an embryo who's in need, just like I would adopt a born child. And there's nuance and complicated factors with each of these. So probably at this point, looking at the clock and knowing there's other calls, I would say in the book, there's a whole appendix on wading through what to do with embryo adoption.
Anonymous, thank you very much. I do hope that that was helpful to you. We're talking with Stephanie Gray Connors. You know Stephanie from all of her pro-life work. They certainly know her in Boise, Idaho. She's the author of several important pro-life books, Love Unleashes Life, Abortion and the Art of Communicating Truth, Start With What? 10 Principles for Thinking About Assisted Suicide, and now Conceived by Science, Thinking Carefully and Compassionately About Infertility and IVF, and that is our topic for this hour, in vitro fertilization. If you have questions in that regard, 888-318-7884 is the number. And we're going to go to Rick now in Bloomington, Illinois, listening on EWTN Radio 92.5 FM. Rick, go ahead with your question for Stephanie.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. I really appreciate it. And first, I just want to say, so really grateful before God and man of your pro-life work. I really appreciate that. And usually or sometimes right after the big compliment comes the big challenge.
Laid on us.
Well, I'm going to have to take, you know, Conceived by Science. I feel like God is so much bigger, and to imply that a human being could be conceived by science, to me, really, really misses the absolute mystery that conception is and the spiritual aspect of it. Whether it happened in vitro or through sexual intimacy, as you've discussed, God is involved at that point of conception, both spiritually, physically, and I suppose metaphysically, if you will. But the ethical issues notwithstanding of the, hey, terminating a, I would say, post-conceptual embryo, right? I mean, calling it an embryo is even kind of strange. I mean, a human, terminating a human would be obviously unethical and immoral. But as far as thinking that man, it's a weird arrogance of man to think that we are creating people through science. God created the person. You know, the other lady that called in talking about her niece and nephew, there's no implication there that they're anything other than a child of God, period. Right. Full stop.
Rick, I'm going to let Stephanie respond, and then I'm going to come back to you, because this sounds like something to have a conversation about. Stephanie?
Sure, Rick. I appreciate you making that point, and actually gives me an opportunity to provide a clarification that I certainly believe, regardless of how someone was conceived, that if someone comes into existence, that God is involved, because it's He who places His image in every human being and indwells a soul in every human being. What I'm proposing is that even if God can work with whatever choices we humans make, the question is not what can humans do, but what ought humans do? What should we do from a moral perspective? And so if we think, for example, not just about a child conceived through beautiful sexual intimacy versus a child conceived by IVF, but let's throw two other examples in the mix. Let's say we have a child conceived as a result of lustful hookup, and then a child conceived as a result of violent rape. Okay, in four cases, we have children who are unrepeatable, irreplaceable individuals who are willed by God. God has placed His image in those children and given them a soul. But I think you and I could agree that of those four conceptions, they're not all equal. As terrible as lust is, the violence of rape is even worse. But lust isn't good, and that's why we would say we ought to have children come into existence through marital unity and intimacy, not lustful hookups. And so if we can make a judgment call and a ranking about marital bliss, lustful hookup versus violent rape, why can't we also rank IVF into the mix and say, okay, even though God will indwell a soul, it doesn't mean that we should make humans this way, just like He'll indwell a soul in a child conceived in rape, but we shouldn't make humans that way. We shouldn't make humans through lust. But by the way, if we do that, God will still indwell a soul in that human. So what I'm trying to do is not question that God works with whatever messes or great things humans make, but that God has an order that He would like us to follow, and to ask the question, what is that order? What do you think of that, Rick?
I couldn't disagree more completely, honestly. We aren't making humans. God is making humans. And your distinction between the four different ways that humans come into the world is, wow, almost offensive. I mean, honestly, a child, a product of violent rape or lust, is somehow not equal to the other children is almost unbelievable. I mean, I would have to go back to from David and Bathsheba through that lustful, unbelievably immoral interaction. Came the lineage of Jesus Christ on a, you know, his earthly genealogy.
I have to be honest with you, Rick.
It's that you would make that statement.
It's hard for me to quite grasp what the disagreement is, because it seemed like Stephanie said exactly what you're saying, which is the worth of the child is not at all impacted by how the child
I'm
was made.
All four. Yeah, I'm saying
I don't
all
see
four
the disagreement.
Children are equal.
What I thought I heard
all four
Stephanie
children
say
have
was
souls.
That people make other people. God makes the people. So if that child is here a product of a violent rape, lust, a perfect union which doesn't exist, or in vitro, God's hand is on all four of those, all four equal, and that person who is on the planet is, there's no distinction that I could make before God.
No,
of
right.
Any of those individuals.
Right, but I think that's what Stephanie said. I do have to throw in a good old fashioned Catholic both and. God makes people and people make people. It's not an either or, it's a both and. There's never been a person made without other people cooperating except for Adam. And even Adam, there was dirt around. But all I'm saying is it's a both and. People are participants in the creating of people. But I don't think there's any even a slight distance between what you and Stephanie are saying about the child. Like Stephanie,
right? Sure. In the example you give of David and Bathsheba, right? David lusted after Bathsheba, had a child with her, as you rightly acknowledge. God worked with that. God works with the fall of man by bringing Jesus into the world. So yes, God works with anything, but it doesn't mean what He works with was ultimately good. That's why David himself in the Psalms cried out, create in me a clean heart, O God. Why was he wanting a clean heart? Because his heart had been unclean, because he was a sinner and he needed God to transform him. So it doesn't mean that the child created doesn't bear the image of God. In other words, the child created, regardless of how they were created, does bear the image of God. But if David was crying out that he needed a heart to be created or to be made clean, he was admitting that there was a mistake in what he chose to do. And so the same is true then, whether we pursue IVF or we pursue other immoral ways of creating human beings. It's not the human being I'm calling into question, it's the method in which the human being was created. And I'm asking us to consider, do we need to be like David? And do we need to get on our knees and say, create in me a clean heart, O God, knowing that God will. He will take, as we're told in Ezekiel, the heart of stone and replace it with a heart of flesh. So God will transform anything. That's the good news. I'm glad you've made this call so I can make that point. But let's not confuse how someone was created with who is created. So I'm not questioning the value of who. I'm questioning the morality of how someone is coming into existence.
We got to take a break. Rick, thank you very much. I really appreciate the conversation. Stephanie Gray Connors is our guest. One of the great voices defending life in the world has a brand new book on in vitro fertilization, an area that needs so much clarification. If you need some of that clarification, you're welcome to call. Or if you'd like help explaining the moral position on in vitro fertilization to other people, maybe you're a teacher, maybe you're a parent, maybe it's for a spouse. Conceived by Science is the book. The number here, 888-318-7884.
It's all about the truth. Catholic Answers Live.
Underwriting for Catholic Answers Live is provided by Real Estate for Life. Real Estate for Life connects home buyers and sellers to real estate agents while supporting pro-life organizations. On the web at realestateforlife.org.
Wherever you are in the world, you can access the EWTN Global Catholic Network. It's everywhere. You can get EWTN's great Catholic programming on your car radio, at home on your TV, computer, or smart speaker. With EWTN's app, you can take EWTN everywhere, on your phone or mobile device. If you want your news in print, turn to EWTN's paper of record, the National Catholic Register. EWTN, the Global Catholic Network.
Do you want to end abortion? Halt the attack on traditional marriage? And ensure religious freedom for ourselves and for our grandchildren? To do this, we must convert the culture. St. Paul Street Evangelization is a grassroots initiative that recognizes this need and takes it to the streets. If you're interested in peacefully sharing the gospel in your area, visit streetevangelization.com to learn more.
Welcome back, Catholic Answers Live. We're talking about in vitro fertilization with our good friend Stephanie Gray Connors, who's back doing pro-life talks and media appearances after taking the time to have little Violet, bring little Violet into the world, parent little Violet, and now little Violet's with her dad while Stephanie's with us. And Stephanie has a brand new book called Conceived by Science, Thinking Carefully and Compassionately About Infertility and IVF. IVF, of course, being in vitro fertilization. And Stephanie, I guess this is a kind of a sensitive one because there's several people who asked us to ask you their questions, but they did not want to stay on the air to ask them. So I will ask Dale's question from Cleveland. It seems like you're splitting hairs between fertility clinics and IVF procedures. If God has determined that people can't get pregnant, how is it different?
I'm not sure I understand the question.
Well,
you're not the questioner, but...
Yeah, no, my sense is that you were saying that there are many infertility treatments that are perfectly legitimate and fine and even and good, but IVF is not one of them. And I think that Dale is saying you're splitting hairs.
Okay. I think then I understand. So basically, if we're trying to determine what are the ethical paths to the great end of children... And what are the unethical paths to the great end of children? Kind of, if we're concerned about the manufacturing of human beings, then a good standard to have is this. Is the path I'm taking aiding the sexual act in achieving its end of creating children, or is it replacing the sexual act? So if what I'm doing is replacing the sexual act, then I am forcing a human into existence at the hands of typically a party outside of marriage. If I'm aiding the sexual act, then I'm receiving a human who may be the fruit of a loving, you know, physical manifestation of one's vows, but I'm not forcing someone into existence. So if you do surgery to unblock fallopian tubes, if you take drugs so that your body will release an egg, in each of these cases, if you take progesterone so that your body will be able to get pregnant or sustain a pregnancy, in each of these cases, you're still having sex. And what you're doing is identifying something's wrong with the body, and you're doing an intervention to restore the body to its healthy function so that when the two people come together, their body is bodies are more likely to produce offspring. Whereas with IVF, you're not correcting an underlying condition. You're just creating a whole new procedure that replaces sex entirely. Sex is something God made necessary for offspring. IVF makes it entirely unnecessary. And instead, you're contracting out to a third party, someone who's not part of the marital covenant, to actually create a human being. And instead of the child coming into existence beneath the mother's heart, the child is coming into existence in a lab at the hands of a stranger who's very often determining the next generation by determining which sperm and which egg go together, for example.
Dale, thanks very much. Another one, this is from an anonymous questioner. It's a follow-up to something you were talking about earlier. Wants you to elaborate on this. What are the repercussions? As a matter of fact, everything I have is from people who didn't want to. So I'm not holding anybody off on the calls, by the way. These are all people that wanted me to read their question. What are the repercussions if someone decides to do an embryo adoption? Does it pose a moral problem? Are you willing to get into that a little more? Or?
Sure, I can a little bit. So the moral problem with even embryo adoption that would cause those who object to the embryo adoption to be concerned is to say, if sex is the way God designed children to come into existence, then the only time a child should ever get into, for example, my body is through an act of sexual intimacy with my husband. And so if someone pursues embryo adoption, we're essentially putting into someone's body a child who would never be able to, morally speaking, get into that body through the marriage bed. Because if I adopt a stranger's baby, then that embryo would never have come into my body through sexual intimacy, because that's not the fruit of my marital relationship. That's not my biological offspring or that of my husband's. So the concern is that we're thwarting the natural designs of how things were meant to be by implanting someone who wouldn't, morally speaking, be able to come into existence through the marriage bed. One of the other concerns is that if a married couple pursues embryo adoption, that they are essentially closing the womb for the 9 months or more, if you count the time after to restore the body, they're closing the womb to their own offspring. So what responsibility do we have to, in a marital relationship, be open to our own children coming into existence through natural sexual relations? And how important is that? Because if you adopt an embryo, there's no way, if you have sex over those 9 months, that your own child will come into existence. And is there a very specific child God wills for a couple to have that could only happen if they had sex over those 9 months and the womb was empty so that their child could be conceived and implanted? But if you have a stranger's child in your body, then you can't have your own child for that period of time. Does that matter? That's an example of another concern. So these are just a couple of the concerns that we need to think about when considering the ethics of implanting someone else's child in one's body.
Okay. I think that the longer the discussion goes on about this in Catholic circles, the more I'm sensing a rejection of it. That there's more and more ethicists who seem to be going, you know, the more we think about this, the problems are too great, and it's not likely acceptable. Although I'm not claiming that the church has said anything of the sort. I feel that trend. I don't know how you feel about it, Stephanie.
I do sense that trend as well. And I know for myself, again, because it's debatable, you know, a couple years ago, I used to think maybe a case could be made. Now I think it's a very narrow window if it can be made at all. And I really hesitate. And that's why I really unpack that, though, with the appendix.
Yeah, and I just for the person who asked the question, I think the mainstream of cat, although there are certainly significant exceptions to this, people who are very smart, much smarter than I am, if you kind of just look at the mainstream of Catholic thought on this, it seems to be going in the direction of, no, we can't actually justify this morally. Our guest is Stephanie Gray Connors. Please consider getting her book. Maybe leave it around. This is one of those ones where if someone picks it up, you'll have a wonderful conversation. It's called Conceived by Science. It's about dealing with IVF and infertility in a way that's morally responsible, but also sensitive to the real lives of real people. Stephanie Gray Connors, thanks. Really appreciate it.
You're welcome.
And thank your husband for taking care of Violet. And we'll see you next time, God willing, right here, Catholic Answers Live.